from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and live from San Jose's downtown College Prep High School. We're broadcasting remote, and in the opening hour, we'll discuss the path to college with recognition of the fact that more students than ever before in the state are first in their families to apply to colleges and universities. 96% of the graduates of this charter school we are at this morning. It's a school that's largely Hispanic and geared toward preparing underachieving students. 96% wind up being accepted to a four-year college or university. And in the hour ahead, we'll find out why, and we'll examine some of the reasons students make it or don't make it to the college level. Forum is next, after this. KQED Public Radio and live from San Jose's downtown College Prep High School. We are with a live audience. I'm Michael Krasny, and we actually have some notables in this audience. Former Mayor Susan Hammer is with us this morning. Former Superintendent of the San Jose Unified School District, Linda Murray. Frank Beal, Eastside Union High School District. And Joe DeSalvo, who's with the Santa Clara County Board of Education. And Ash Kelra from the San Jose City Council. And Alicia Gallegos, San Jose Charter School Consortium. We're here because San Jose Downtown Prep is the first charter school in Silicon Valley, and it's the only one with the mission of preparing underachieving students who will be the first in their families to graduate from college. And the hope is, of course, that they'll thrive at four-year colleges and universities. The school, which has smaller than regular classes, a strict code of conduct, and at least for everybody except seniors, a school uniform dress code, is committed to college success for all of its students. And in the opening hour of this morning's remote broadcast, we want to focus on ways of enhancing the path to college, especially for students from families with no college or higher education history. Joining us here this morning, and let me introduce all the guests that we have with us, is Michael Kirst, Emeritus Professor of Education and Business Administration at Stanford, former President of the California State Board of Education between 76 and 81. Welcome, Michael Kirst.
Good morning.
We also have with us the principal of Downtown College Prep, Michael D'Souza, and welcome to you. Glad to have you aboard.
Thanks for coming to DCP. We're happy to have you.
And Mildred Llanos-Richards is head counselor at James Lick High School. She also joins us on this morning's panel. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you. And Pedro Medina is here. He's a Downtown College Prep student, class of 2010. Pedro, good
morning,
to have
everyone.
You. Thanks to all of you for being here. And let me begin, if I may, by let's talk to the principal first. There are waiting lists here, and you enroll 9th and 10th graders. But I think the big thing that has to be emphasized is homework, required homework, 2 hours of math and English every day.
So we do require that all our teachers assign homework daily, and we recognize that it's a challenge for each of our teachers to come up with meaningful homework, but also a challenge for our students to complete their homework every day. But part of what our school has to do is make sure that every kid believes that they can do it and is held accountable for it.
There's a real supportive atmosphere here. I mean, when I walked in, kids were shaking hands with me. There's a real friendly feeling that you have and feeling of community and family. You have to ride herd on them too, though, don't you?
I've had plenty of deep, long, hard conversations with several students. It's something that's a daily work of being working in schools as a teacher, as an administrator. Yeah, we don't shy away from those hard conversations.
And the class sizes are, what, down around 24, while public schools generally are 30 and climbing. So that's a real advantage. All these advantages notwithstanding, the disadvantage here is you've got somewhat of a homogenous group, don't you?
We have a very homogenous group. 96% of our students are Latino.
And that makes it more difficult in some ways, doesn't it, to make the transition to college?
Are you saying the homogeny of our group?
Well,
they're
used to having, you know, kids who are of the same color, of the same ethnic background. Many of these kids have nobody in their family who went to college, and therefore suddenly they're at college and often feel isolated, as I understand it.
That is a huge challenge, and so we consistently talk about what does it mean? What does it mean to be one of the few Latinos in your class when you go to college? We talk about that as we go on our college tours. What is it going to feel like when I'm going to be in a class and look around and be the minority when they've been 4 years here where they feel part of a group that's the whole?
Is there a way to make them feel more accustomed or to get them conditioned to, you know, being exposed to different cultures and not the homogeneity that you have here?
So one of our core values at DCP is orgullo, which is pride. And so a lot of it has to do with taking pride of who you are and believing that you want to prove it to yourself and to your family and to the greater community what you can do. So I often hear students say that they're breaking stereotypes, that they're going to go to college even though people don't believe they can go to college. So part of it is just preparing their own resilience, their own belief in who they are and their belief in their and what it means for themselves and their families to go to college.
Again, Michael D'Souza is the principal of Downtown College Prep. And Pedro Medina is a Downtown College Prep student from the class of 2010. Let's talk about the difficulties that face you here. I mean, no one in your family has graduated college, is that correct?
No, that's correct. Yeah.
And so you're going to go to college and you're going to be away from this nice family homogenous atmosphere that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
What are you doing to prepare for that?
Well, first of all, what I'm doing is getting, you know, through high school, first of all, and, you know, trying to get engaged with the community and getting more used to going to college and, like, what college is about and, like, what it takes to be there, you know.
That's, well, congratulations, because you've already been accepted to San Francisco State and Monterey Bay and San Jose State.
Yeah.
You got a big decision to make, huh?
I know. I don't know. I'm between those two right now.
But either way, you're not going to be that far from home.
That's a good thing, yeah.
And for many students who set out, particularly first generation so-called, nobody in the family has graduated college, leaving home is difficult, and leaving home particularly when you're moving farther away is even more difficult.
Yep. Uh-huh. So that's a hard decision to make.
Well, what are you doing to help you decide?
Well, first of all, I think about economic situation in a way. So since I have a job already and I always have money in my pocket, I'm thinking about like either staying in San Jose State because that way I can be working and paying off for college at the same time. Or if I go to San Francisco State, I need to be commuting back and forth to like, you know, having a job and going to school at the same time. So, you know, the economic situation is a very important part of going to college for me, you know. So like, when I'm done with college, I don't have, like, this, you know, big debt that I have to pay off, and I don't know how to pay it, so it's just better to be doing it in the process.
You're handling the money side of it. That's very smart of you.
Yeah.
Now, you've described yourself as, well, not exactly a troubled kid, but you were acting out, you were getting bad grades.
Yeah,
then you came here, and now you're headed off to be a college student.
Uh-huh.
What did this place do for you, or what was the real deciding factor in turning you around?
Well, first of all, a comment I have to make is that, you know, we are a stronger generation coming up, and we just need to be led the right direction and view our lives from a different perspective with higher expectations for ourselves, and then we'll be successful, you know? This school, I don't know, it's just like giving me the opportunities to prove to myself that I can be a better person and what I can show to everybody else.
You said they didn't let you slip through the cracks. You said they don't let anybody slip through the cracks here, right?
That's right, yeah.
So what do they do that allows for that, in your judgment?
Well, I think they're pretty strict. That's one big part of this school, you know, that you have to do what they tell you to do. Otherwise, you're just not going to go to the next level.
Are the students in the audience, do you agree with Pedro? Are they pretty strict here? And that's a good thing? Okay.
Most of
so you want order in your lives, is what I'm hearing you say, right? So good luck to you, Pedro, and congratulations again. I think one of those institutions that you decide on will be lucky to have you. Mildred Janos Richards is also here. She's the head counselor over at Lick. James Lick has a student body pretty similar, except sort of those who come here before they come here, right?
Yes. James Lick is about 80% Latino, and that makes them very similar. But I think the student population at James Lick, being a neighborhood school, has students walking in the door with different skills and expectations of high school. So it's a different challenge.
Talk about the difficulties of these so-called first-year college applying students, that is, first of their generation, to go off to college. In many respects, I think you've said they need a lot of hand-holding.
Well, when they come into our high school, they have different expectations. We have a small group that shares this value, like students at the CP that have a commitment to go to college. And for them, the path is very clear. They have a plan.
How does that happen, though? Because they're the first in their families, and in many instances, the parents do value education.
That's the key to it. Yes. Yeah. And they tell you so. The parents do value education. They trust that putting them in school will give them a better future. They put them in your hands. And it is really about creating a setup, a plan of action, a plan of study for students that enables them to reach that goal, even going beyond their expectations of what they plan to learn.
But we have a dearth and lack of counselors. It's running about 500 to 1 now. So how do you work with students on that kind of a basis when there's such a lopsided, disproportionate number lacking of counselors?
Well, you have to create a systemic approach. You have to create, for example, let me give you some examples. In scheduling students as freshmen, for example, we look to see that students who are at grade level have access to college prep classes that put them on a track for meeting the A through G requirements. We try to give them fewer options so that their options all align with college. And yes, we have a high ratio of meeting with students, but we create conversations that guide them and keep them on track.
Principal D'Souza, you want to say something here?
Yes, please. One of the things that I think is important for us to think about charter schools and what populations we serve, and in particular the population that Downtown College Prep serves. There is a preconception that charter schools serve a motivated or a identified group that's already on track to college. And so at DCP, we specifically target students who are failing in middle school. So we send our marketing materials to families who have at least one F or more in middle school. Mm-hmm. So of the students in the crowd, can you raise your hand if you came to DCP and you didn't actually want to be here when you first came?
Well, they can't see those hands on radio, but most hands went up.
Almost all the hands came up.
Almost all the hands went up.
It's important for us to recognize that schools can change the way that students think about college. Pedro is a perfect example. He did not want to go to college as a 14-year-old. He did not believe in his college path. Over the time being here for 4 years, we help them believe that they can do it, and we hold them accountable for doing it.
It's a bit of a sales job, isn't it? You're saying, look, if you go to college, no, I'm serious about this. You go to college, this is going to be more income, more possibility for jobs. In fact, you look at the statistics, $1 million more in a lifetime college graduates still make, all of those kinds of things, and actually you live longer if you go to college too, it's been proven.
The easiest sales job we make is having the students think about their families. And they talk about the struggle their families have faced. They talk about how hard their families have had to work. And they recognize eventually that they want something better from themselves. Many of them want to help provide for their families. Many of them want to make sure that their own children someday have a better life. And so the sales job comes from their own experience, from their own struggles, from their own identity as Latino students in San Jose recognizing.
You're holding your heart here. The story is that...
It's my story. My family had a third grade education. They had no money, came to this country, and the opportunity of America, the opportunity of getting my college degree, I was the only one in my family to do it. So it's very personal. I cry once a week because of what students say and do, the way they talk about school, the way they talk about their families. This is a very emotional place.
You don't lose
macho
points for crying?
Am I not macho enough? I think I'm macho enough, but I also love them deeply. I think it's okay.
I think it sounds pretty okay to me.
I'd like to...
Mildred Llanos, yeah.
I'd like to echo that, yes.
Llanos, Richard, excuse me.
No problem. I agree completely that I think we need to support all students, and we create that motivation, that desire, and the knowledge to own their decision to go to college, no matter what skills they bring.
Title I helps, though, doesn't it?
Some.
I mean, let's talk about just the economics of this, because in many instances, financial aid is, as we know, not drying up, but it's more difficult in some instances to find. We've got Pedro here who goes to work and has helped himself along those lines. The economics can be pretty daunting.
It can be, but I think we will find options for students. I think what we need to create is more students with the knowledge to own that decision to go to college. We need to prepare them, and they will find a way.
But you also have to help them. I mean, many students, as far as applying for financial aid or applying to colleges even, to give them a push, you have to tell them these are deadlines that you have to observe and all that? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. If we're talking about the senior class, we're looking at, we need a lot of collaboration with other support services, CalSOAP, Gear Up, any other programs that will come in and support the role of the counselor, because as you said, our ratio is pretty high, so we couldn't do it alone. And these students do a lot of support.
It helps at a charter school because you can select staff, and that's a big advantage in many respects, isn't it, Mike D'Souza?
Yeah, I think that's huge, and I think that we only hire adults that want to take responsibility for getting every single student to college. If you don't believe that every student deserves to go to college, if you don't believe that every student has the potential to go to college, then you won't work at DCP. You need to have that deep belief that every child deserves a college education, that every child has the potential to make it to college.
Well, Michael Kirst, let's bring you into this because you've been talking for years about post-secondary education in terms of not only colleges and universities but vocational schools, and maybe every kid ought to be thinking about post-secondary in that broader sense. Or
yeah, I want to point out that downtown college prep is not a traditional American high school. A traditional American high school is a comprehensive high school with presumably a program for all kinds of interests, including those who want to go to work right after high school, those who want many electives, jewelry making, and so on, so that there can be several choices you have in addition to college prep courses, and then a college prep course itself. So this school is only focused on college going as its focus, and therefore it can create a culture of college going, of college, you know, you just in the building, it feels like college, the banners are everywhere, and it's really important to do that. How you could take this kind of model, it's a very small school with about 100 per class, and blow that up and make each of the comprehensive high schools, which are big, sprawling campuses, often with 1,000, 2,000, Los Angeles, 4,000 students. I think that's the challenge before us, is how to create models of this type, and then also we're stuck with these big buildings. What can we do within these big buildings to create the kind of college-going atmosphere, the press, the expectation, and the course focus that is crucial? California's graduation standards from high school are well short of college preparation. They don't have enough numbers of years of mathematics and English. And California's exit exam from high school is 6th to 8th grade math standards and 8th to 10th grade English standards. So the typical student in many first-generation high schools does not get any signals that they're not prepared. They think, I graduated from high school, I passed my exit exam, I'm ready for college. That leads to 70 to 80% remediation in our community colleges and about 55% remediation in our four-year Cal State system.
And leads often to a rude awakening once they're on the college campus and facing, well, the kind of curriculum challenges that they have. And you've been for years advocating the disconnect between high schools not preparing students for college education. Now we've got, what, California being 50th in number of guidance counselors in the whole country?
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to have to come up with some very creative models that I think do a lot more online. We just don't have the people. I'm not quite sure. We need an entirely new approach to this because our counselor ratios were 1 to 400, then 1 to 600, and now they're going up. And so it's an endangered species, sort of like the snail darter was or something. So it's really very serious. And I think rethinking this and creating atmospheres are very important. It's not just that you take the right courses, it's what's in the courses. Cal State University has 55% remediation across the system. Their students all take the courses these students take, so-called A to G, 4 years of math, four years of English, 3 years of math, and so on. So it's what's in the courses that's important. And then it is the pace. That's what I like what I heard, because when you get to college, they cover in 45 days what the high schools teach in 170 days. And the out-of-class work per hour of classroom is about 3 hours of homework. And so a lot of these students who are even fairly well prepared, like some of these in this audience, will find they're really overwhelmed by the pace of the whole thing when they get there. Well, so it's a deep problem.
Actually, Pedro, let me bring you back in this, because I know you were kind of afraid of taking a physics course,
but
you did it, right?
Uh-huh. I just thought of it as a challenge, one more challenge in my life, and I thought it would be a great experience to learn more about, you know, education. And, like, physics is a great subject after all.
And you did okay.
I'm doing fine right now.
Yeah, okay. That's a good, inspiring story to hear, isn't it? Let me go back to you, Michael Kirst, because research shows, I guess, that parents are the biggest predictors of education success. And if parents don't have an education on a college level, and if they haven't had any history of college, it's frankly a disadvantage compared to those who are in the opposite.
Yes, it is. Every study shows that. And so They have not that puts the burden on the high schools, the middle schools, and the elementary schools to provide more information, more understanding of this, how to navigate the system. The financial aid system is very complex, and the federal student aid forms are recently been simplified, but they're really in many ways as difficult as a tax form. So for parents to deal with this, they need a lot of information and a lot of reinforcement from the school, and they really have to rely on the school to provide a lot of this help to the child in conjunction with the parents.
Mildred Janos-Richards, this is a charter school. It's very unlike James Lick in many ways. What do you see as the crucial differences, particularly that affect your students?
I would say the fact that we are a neighborhood school and that we have to have a plan for every student that walks in the door. And in thinking about it, creating a plan from the start to allow students to complete those requirements that are for college, putting as many students into science courses that lead them to physics and physiology and all that, teaching them or educating them past their entry-level expectations. Because although they value education when they walk in the door and they're thinking a high school diploma, we can't stop there. We have to create a way to capture them and enable them to meet the college requirements.
Yeah, when you use that metaphor, I think of a big net or something to put around them.
Yes, that's true.
What do you do, I mean, in terms of capturing? What is it, for example? Give us a.
In the last 2 years, we've put a big emphasis on talking with 9th and 10th graders about their grades as they progress. We've also strengthened our partnerships with organizations from the outside that seek to help Title I students, right? So they come on campus and they supplement what we do. They call parents. They make sure that every student who's A through G fills out the FAFSA and, you know, invites them for cash for college night. And so we really do have to create a network to support those students because they don't have the know-how, but they have the trust that somehow the school is going to carry their students along.
And Michael Kirst, you said, say compared to other charter schools like the one over in Oakland, Aspire Prep, this is more, the school we're at today is more of a rescue operation in some ways, huh?
Yeah, the big challenge here that I'm still trying to understand is how you can take students who are 2, 3, 4 grades behind the 9th grade when they arrive here and get them to a point where they can succeed in this program. I know that Stanford has a charter school in East Palo Alto. It's a high school, and the pupils come in at that level of 3 grades behind 9th grade. And so how you make that up in a very short period of time and then get the pupils to be ready for a 4-year college, this is quite a stretch. So Aspire does this in Oakland as well. But it really stresses something that very important of the middle grades. All the studies show that if you're not on a college track by 9th grade, it's very difficult to overcome that. So we need to push deeper into these middle grades, I think, to make progress with huge numbers of students.
Michael Kirst, again, is Emeritus Professor of Education and Business Administration at Stanford, former President of the California State Board of Education. When we come back, we'll talk to him about a breaking story about proposed academic standards. But in the meantime, Michael D'Souza, Principal of Downtown College Prep, and Mildred Janos-Richards, who is Head Counselor at James Lick High School, and Pedro Medina, who is Downtown College Prep student in the class of 2010, are all with us, along with a live audience. And you can be with us as well. In fact, we invite you to join us, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or you can post a comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In California, more students are the first in their families to apply to college than ever before. It is not an easy leap for many of them. And in this opening hour of our special live 2-hour remote broadcast from San Jose's Downtown College Prep High School, we're talking about that, as well as the challenges and successful strategies that help students qualify for college. With us is Michael Kirst, who is Emeritus Professor of Education and Business Administration at Stanford and former President of the California State Board of Education. Michael D'Souza, who's Principal of Downtown College Prep. Mildred Llanos-Richards, who is a head counselor at James Lake High School, and Pedro Medina, who is a Downtown College Prep class student of the class of 2010. And you are welcome to join us. In fact, if you'd like to, you can do that toll-free at 866-733-6786. And those of you in the audience, if you have a question or comment, can certainly join us simply by raising your hand. We'll go to you with a microphone, and we'll do that in just a moment. I wanted to, however, bring something to bear that I mentioned before we went to the break, and that is the whole question of breaking story. Governors and state superintendents have put together proposed new academic standards. This was just released earlier this morning, and it does affect about 48 of the 50 states. It's supposed to provide kind of a roadmap to replace local standards, and it will have an immense effect on textbooks and standardized tests. And I thought, as long as we have Michael Kirst here, who is a veteran of many education wars, he could tell us, what do you make of this, Mike? I mean, what do you see in it?
Well, it's an important development. The history of American education, of course, has been local school boards, local districts setting their own curriculum, and we moved to state standards, not only in 2000, but as recently as 2005. And a consensus has been reached among a lot of national leaders and state leaders that the standards that the state set are too uneven and in some cases way too low. Moreover, that a lot of the standards that states set, including California, were not geared to be college ready. They were really K-12 standards. They weren't aligned with what you need to be ready to be successful in college. So this group of governors, and 48 governors, 48 chief state school officers, including California, sat down with a group of educators and others and said, let's come up with some national common curriculum standards. I mean, in the 50s, this would have been viewed as communism, I think. That we'd have a national
standard. Still is by certain people, I'm sure.
Yeah, all right. So this is quite path-breaking, and it is geared to what you need to know and be able to do in college. So it's a lot more than memory. There's a lot of synthesis, analysis, putting things together in different ways, critical analysis, technical reading, not just literature, which is featured so much in the high schools. But it has a long road to go. All of the states have to be willing to adopt these Common Core standards, and then they have to align their textbooks and train their teachers towards them. But it is an important thing that such a wide group of people have reached the view that we need to go all the way to national standards. I mean, this was the hallmark difference of America from every other major country in the world. We didn't have national standards.
Oh, this is big news, and I'm glad for your take and appreciate it. And we're going to go to our audience now. We have a question from one of our, well, I guess, school students. Yes.
My name is Citlali Negrete. I'm a student here, I guess, at Denmark College Prep. My question is to Mildred Llanos. Well, throughout middle school, my experience, I was really discouraged. I was failing two classes before I came to Downtown College Prep, and some of my teachers focused more on the advanced students instead of the ones that weren't really achieving anything. So my question to you is, how do you help those high school students who are still discouraged and are not really being at that advanced level that they should be? Is there any way, because you have a really wide population of students, so my question is, how do you help those underachieving students that are still not even at level throughout high school?
How do you help them catch up, really, you're asking? Yeah. And motivate them. Yeah, Mildred?
Good question. For the last 4 years, we've been inviting all eighth graders to participate in a summer bridge. And the last 2 years has been a really big effort because you're right. It's a big transition to come from eighth grade to ninth grade. And students need to understand what the plan will be for 4 years. Understand and really own it, work towards it. So at our summer bridge program, we invite especially students who are low in their skills to reinforce the math and the basic English skills they're going to need in order to survive freshman year. And it is a mandate of the state that if you are really behind in English and math, you'll have a second hour of English or math to catch up when you're in ninth grade. But more than that, the summer bridge is to familiarize you with the high school, to make a plan for the first 6 weeks of study so you're successful at the minute you start school, to meet your other friends and to meet your teachers who will be some of your mentors once the school year starts, to go on college trips, but most of all, to have a four-year plan that you understand, okay, maybe I'll spend 2 hours of my time my freshman year doing math, but I know that I will catch up, because then the next year I'll move on to geometry, and then on and on.
And we thank you for your question. And Michael D'Souza, do you provide a plan similar to this when students come here?
So we also have a summer bridge program, which helps orient students to our mission and why they're here, and gets them ready for the rigor that we have and the expectations we have. But more importantly, it's the fact that we believe that every kid can do it. And so when they come here, we start putting them in the classes that are going to catch them up. So as a freshman, we'll use data to figure out whether or not they need to be in remediation courses for literacy, whether or not they need to be in remediation classes for math. We've identified students who need extra help after school, and they are assigned to after school help. We do whatever we can in terms of the academic program to make sure they're getting what we need. But in particular, a new initiatives that we're really pushing hard at DCP, and I think is exciting, is that we have really clear goals for all of our students in terms of what objectives they have for learning in every class. Teachers are measuring their growth on each of these objectives, and they're providing reteaching when the students are not making it. So that we're not just what happens in for sure in college, and definitely in my high school career, is you just move forward with the curriculum like you're on a train, and the train can't change directions or change paths. But we're going to stop the train when we need to, pick up the standards, pick up the objectives that we didn't get every student to learn, get back on the train, keep moving. What happens for most students
sometimes
in high school,
a lot of train stops, in fact, right?
Yeah, and I think what happens is the train hasn't been stopping. That the intention
of
the intention is the train just keeps on going, and whether or not kids are still on it or not, it keeps on going. And so we get to the end of the year, and we have comprehensive high schools in San Jose that have a school like large schools like James Lick with less than 15 Latino students graduating with the courses needed to graduate to enter into the university. 15 students. Whereas every single student here is going to complete their ATG requirements because we stick with them the whole way. If they need to take an extra year, they will. If they need to repeat the class, they will. You can't even get a D at DCP. It's either A, B, C, or F because you need to pass. We expect everyone to do it.
Pedro, you want to add something here? Pedro,
yeah, there's also many conflicts that they have in public high schools. Like I came from Del Mar High School, which I was involved in gangs and other different activities that took me the wrong direction from my
education. And I notice you're wearing a tie now.
I'm wearing a tie. Right. Right. So one question I had for Ms.
Llanos-san.
Llanos, yeah. How do you deal with, like, one of the problems in high school, which are, like, gang violence, pregnant teenagers, drug addicts, which are, like, young people who are addicted to drugs, economic situations in their lives, chaos in their lives, family problems, and just being lazy in general for many people in high school.
Mildred Llanos-Richards, how much time do we have here this morning? That's quite a list you gave us, Pedro. Problems with delinquency or with students acting out or being too aggressive, those problems are rife, are they not?
They're there, yes. We see them. But I think... What I see as my role as a counselor to support students is to provide them with the best plan for education, focus on education. And there we do in each comprehensive high school have support services to assist these students by offering counseling, personal counseling, and referring them to other support services. But I think the most important way that we can support these students is to remind them that they want to get that high school diploma. If college is not in the plans, high school diploma. Life is better with it. This is what you want, and keep them focused on that.
That's like the grail, right? You hold that out there as the the end zone or whatever. Huh?
They need that. Mm-hmm.
As motivator. Let me go to one of our callers, Antonio. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. So I was a teacher for many years, and I just wanted to comment that we noticed in the classes in the departments that I was in that there are generational patterns to what students look for when it comes to education after they get through the high school. For example, people whose parents are recently come to the U.S. and work in service and agriculture or labor, they tend to become teachers and nurses and business owners or at-home parents. And then it goes to science, artists, and like bankers, investors, excuse me. I'm just wondering, how can that information be used in planning in high school for what, because there are so many patterns in what high school students want to do when they get to college. How can that be better infused into college counseling?
Who would like to handle that question? Michael Kirst, actually.
Well, right now about 70% of the students who graduate from high school across the U.S. go to college. So they are going and in at very high rate. So one of the things that was mentioned was a lot of students, particularly low-income students, go part-time and they have to work a lot. So that also makes it more risky that you won't finish. So balancing that in the lives of these students is very difficult. I think the counseling also in colleges is very weak, particularly, for example, at community colleges. Over half our students go to community colleges in California, and they have ratios of one counselor for every 1,400 students. So at places like Downtown Prep, the students are coming back here to get help from a counselor they have on site that helps them in college. So this is a continual process that we can't just load on the high schools. They don't have the resources. We have to have the colleges and the high schools working much more closely together and much more communication from the colleges. They have grown apart from the high schools. San Jose State used to be called San Jose State Normal School. It trained teachers, was very close. Now it's much more distance. And the community colleges used to be part of the high school districts, but now they're separate.
This may seem obvious, Michael, but we need a lot more connectedness from K through 12 onto the colleges and the community colleges. I mean, there's a lot of disconnection in terms of the whole school system, period.
Yeah, that's right. And the assumption was if you went on to college, you were on your road and you knew what to do. And now when we have so many more students going and so many of them have other needs of like part-time and work, these connections have not been tight enough. And particularly with the schools like community colleges and the state colleges, because they don't have the resources to really do this.
Let's go to our audience. We have somebody who has a question or comment, please.
Yes, my name is Dennis Lopez. I'm new to the area, and I work at San Jose State as the director of the Educational Opportunity Program. And something that Mr. Medina mentioned a little while ago, and it's, I think, a thread through several of the comments, really is the essence of my concern or my question, and that is, just being here, for example, I get chills. This is the second time I've been to this campus, to a place that was described with purposeful selection of students who are low income, below grade level, and with the purposeful selection and understanding that all these students will succeed with the rigor and the academic supports. So in an environment that we are all in with greater concentrations of poverty, greater focuses, the question was asked early on about the 94% Latino population. At schools where there are 94% or 90% African-American and Chicano Latino students, those schools tend to have characteristics of concentrated poverty, of high dropout rates, of low college going rates, as I think was mentioned earlier. So I guess in terms of trying to just frame my concern or my question, you know, I just feel so special being here because there's parent involvement, because there's student commitment, there's teacher commitment, there is active securing of extramural funding here and in places like Harlem with the Jeffrey Canada programs there in Harlem, because it costs to provide the sufficient, adequate academic support to have the success that College Prep Magnet does. Lastly, I just want to comment that the colleague from Lick High School is, I think, a real good example of the heroes out there that in the face of all of these challenges, yet try to do, like in some way they're doing here, not only the culture of college going, but the structures, and perhaps with proportionately much less financial resources to accomplish that.
Thank you for your comments. I would add, by the way, and Michael D'Souza, you might want to comment on this, that you have something here, and you may also want to remark about this, Mildred Llanos-Richards. You have security here. I mean, there's a sense of safety in this school that public schools don't have.
Security in terms of actual safety or security in terms of financial?
No, I'm talking about safety.
Okay, we're a very safe school. We have very few conflicts between students. I think the two conflicts we found on campus this year have lasted a whole second each conflict. But I think the other financial security is much more something that a lot of us are deep in our hearts are concerned with, that there isn't deep security for a lot of public schools, and that to do the work that we need to do, I think as a community, we need to think if we believe that schools are responsible for shattering patterns. The caller called in with talking about patterns. I'm interested in studying patterns, but I'm more interested in shattering patterns. Schools must serve the role of redoing the social production that happens in our society. We can't be happy with the poor becoming poor.
Well, here's Pedro, for example. You went to work in a restaurant, mm-hmm. and now you've become so interested from the work you're doing that you're thinking possibly of turning that into a vocation as far as your college education. Do I have that right?
Maybe, yeah. Business, yeah.
So you might like that. Actually become a restaurant entrepreneur someday or something like that? I mean, that makes more than a modicum of sense. Can I bring you back into this for just a moment, Mildred Janos-Richards? I mean, in terms of, again, well, we're talking about safety, physical safety. They do a lot here. There's a no tolerance for infractions here or any kind of drugs, violence, that sort of thing. But it's tougher in the public schools, and it's the same kinds of problems economically in the public schools.
Yeah, I think the perception is that our public schools are very unsafe, but I beg to disagree. I mean, I've been at my school for 14 years, and I feel it's a very safe school. And I think the students that come there feel safe. The parents say so.
That's heartening, because one of the things that you hear over and over again, particularly where there are gangs, mm-hmm. is this concern about safety that students have.
Well, these are neighborhood schools. The parents know the school. They see what's happening. They see that there is security. You know, we do have support from a lot of adults watching, making sure that students are safe and they're familiar with what's going on. They get to know the students on the campus so they can prevent any incident before they happen. But I also want to talk about the changing the culture of the school. When you really create that culture of this is what we expect from you and it's what we'll give you, it's what we'll feed you, then some of that extraneous influence, you know, the gangs or the other things, just fall to the side. They just don't take place on your campus.
You have
a whole
different kind of peer culture, in other words,
exactly.
In terms of what's approved.
Exactly.
Or disapproved.
It's what the norm is. It's what the teachers want from you, your counselors expect, your parents are counting that something good will happen from school. You know, they value education. They might not know how to get to college, they might not know the structures, the steps to take, but we need to educate them beyond the entry-level expectations.
There's a whole culture here where you collaborate a lot. I mean, students, parents of students, as well as the teachers and the faculty, do a lot of collaboration together.
So at DCP, we have 2.5 hours a week of collaboration between staff. And so they're collaborating to look at student work and make sure they're making gains in each of the objectives that we've set aside. We also have staff meeting to talk about their advisory groups, because each staff is responsible for about 20 or less students in their advisory. So there is a lot of talk and a lot of common language going on about what we need to get done.
Speaking about a lot of talk, I was asked to ask you about a conversation you had with your staff this morning. Mm-hmm. Emotional talk, what was that?
So as you can tell, our work at DCP is pretty emotional. But sometimes when we have events like this that seems kind of political, we do our best to bring in our teachers to make them feel like this work that's happening today is connected to who they are and the struggle they have with their students, together with their students, to get them where they want to go. So this morning we invited all our staff and several of our alumni families to come in and speak to our teachers to thank them for their work. So there's a story of a father who has had two or three students come through and have all got to college. He's going to have three first-generation college students in his family. We had a father say who both his students came here, resistant, not wanting to be here, but leaving motivated and empowered. And lastly, we actually had one of our families who a lot of people, I think, consider, oh, is this student going to work here? He was a student with Asperger's, struggles socially in the classroom, one of the few Caucasian students on campus. And she couldn't hold herself together because she was just so happy that her son found a place where he feels safe, warm, connected. She no longer has to worry about him. So in a school that is very homogenous, even students like him feel like this is home and this is family.
Let me go to another caller. In fact, Clell is joining us from Oakland. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So in this conversation, there's a lot of talk about all the A through G requirements, and a lot of students will be on that track. But I'm curious to know, what place does career technical education have in all of this? There's a lot of baby boomers that will be retiring, and who's going to take their place? And there's a lot of good paying jobs that can be very fulfilling in the career technical education field.
And here we are in Silicon Valley, too. I mean, it makes great sense. Michael D'Souza?
Yeah, we do not have any technical or vocational programs at Downtown College Prep. And the reason why that is we are trying to shatter patterns of race and class in our community. And that as long as the low-income students and students of color are the ones that are being put into vocational programs, then we are going to stand strong to say that every student deserves a college education. If there was the same ratio of low-income and high-income students doing vocational training, then I can maybe say, okay, let's have some vocational programs. But here at DCP, we are not going to say, oh, you can't do it, so you're going to go be a mechanic. My father was a hard worker. He did not have a college education. He had a wonderful life, but at the same time, until there's no correlation between class and race and what job you have, I need to make sure that my students all believe that they can go to college.
We have a question in the audience.
Yeah, my name is Katie Geiger. I'm a senior over at Santa Clara University. And I was wondering, in an environment where you have so much emphasis on goals and getting into college, that seems like that could be kind of scary for a student. But I've done some tutoring over here, and I've noticed that the students are all really excited to learn. And so how do you foster that passion?
Actually, Pedro, let's find out what you have to say about that. Because it is scary, isn't it?
Well, I think you realize when you what's best for you after a while, after you've like been through a lot of struggle and like just a lot of conflicts in your life, you finally realize that education is the only way that can get you out of there and like provide you with better resources out there and give you a better life in the future, you know, with brighter, you know, goals in your life, and it's just the best way to go.
I have another question in the audience.
Hi, good morning. My name is Dr. Baena Jones, and I'm a representative of the San Jose Evergreen Community College District. And I was wanting to ask the principal a very strategic question. Our chancellor, Rosa Perez, discusses the passion that with or without funds. So knowing that there is always going to be a fallacy of scarcity of resources, we have to fund our values. And it sounds to me as though this school has made a strong commitment, a conscious commitment, and a clear commitment to those values. What I would like for you to answer is, how did you structurally and intentionally stay wedded to your values as you structured the school to serve the students' needs? Thank you.
I'm really glad for this question because I haven't had the chance to talk about teaching and learning very much. And what we believe and what I think is coming out in the field of education is that the impact of a quality teacher on a student is invaluable. There's enough research now that in 2 years, if you have a lower performing teacher, you will fall 3 to 5 years behind. And that same year, if you had two quality teachers for 2 years, they would make leaps and bounds gains. And so the impact of a teacher on a student is so powerful. So we must put our money, and here at DCP, we put our money with teaching. We make sure that this year, as we make reductions, we are going to do whatever we can to make sure that quality teachers stay in contact with our students so that they can make the gains they need to make.
You know, I can't remember if it was Time or Newsweek. The new issue of one of them has a whole cover story on education, and it says the way to create much better education in the United States, get rid of the teachers who shouldn't be in the classroom and get the teachers who are inspired in the classroom. And there may be a great deal to that. Of course, how you do that with all the problems with unions and tenure and everything else is quite a vexing challenge, to put it mildly. We have a question here in the audience. Yes.
Frank Beal. I'm a trustee with the Eastside Union High School District and president of Metro Ed, which is a career technical education joint powers agency that works with six of the high school districts here locally. And I want to assure Mr. DeSosa that all of our classes at Metro Ed and Career Technical Education are articulated with college classes at the various community colleges. Career technical education today is not a shop class. It's not the way it used to be. It's not a channeling. It's another opportunities for students to get to college. And quite frankly, to be a mechanic on a car today, you really have to be a computer technician.
Especially if you're working with Toyotas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think my question sort of comes, and maybe this goes to Michael Kirst, is a question that sort of relates to the charter school model is a very interesting model and a very helpful model in the model that you're using, but it doesn't seem to me to be a model that can address the needs of all students, nor is it a model that has the capacity to grow to meet the needs of all students.
Let me take that question to Michael Kirst because we've got seconds left here. Michael.
Yeah, I would say on these Common Core standards, referring to that, the biggest dispute is that these Common Core standards for all the states that came out today don't have enough technical and career education in them, and I think that may be a big political issue. To your comment on charter schools, the way the charter schools have approached this is like one in downtown Los Angeles, where they are career tech oriented, preserving the right for students to go to a four-year college so that they qualify for that, but they have a very focused career tech base. So the charter answer to your question is that we can't do these humongous comprehensive high schools in terms of land and space, so we'll set up special purpose schools. This one, which is basically four-year college-oriented, then a career tech school, and that we could scale those up so that there are enough options out there for pupils. But right now, we're doing more college, four-year college prep charter schools than we are career technical.
And we've come to the end of this first hour. Thank you, Michael Kirst. Thank you, Michael D'Souza. Thank you, Mildred Llanos-Richards and Pedro Medina. And thank you to our audience.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks also to senior editor Dan Zoll, our producers are Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. Engineers today, Danny Bringer here, Howard Gelman at the station, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Support for this hour of Forum is provided in part by the Walter S. Johnson Foundation. Additional funding for the production of Forum is provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.